I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
With liberty and justice for all. Good evening, Global Patriots. You're listening to Global Patriot Radio, the Vito Esposito Show. I'm Vito. Our call and number tonight and every Global Patriot Radio night is area code 319-527-6706. That's area code 319-527-6706. And I'm joined by that great American, Big Al. Good evening, Al. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great, Vito. Good to be here as always. How are you, sir?
I am doing okay, thank you. I'm doing okay, and it's another glorious day. It's a Monday, and we're here.
And we're right where we are supposed to be.
That is correcto mundo. And so hello to Gulf Dogs, HOV Radio. And I'll tell you what. If you out there are searching for a news outlet, I suggest that you check out bigfootsplace.blogspot.com. It is an absolute great blog spot. It's an eclectic selection of news sources. I try to read every day. It's a great account that Sasquatch documents his travels, like he was in Virginia and he's Pennsylvania and Maryland, and so, you know, Bigfoot kind of documents, and sometimes he provides pictures along the way, which are really good historical photos of America's history, something that wants to be trying to be omitted today. But Bigfoot does a great job with the blog spot, and there are some stories in last week's bigfootsplace.blogspot.com that have spurred and spawned some rants. So that's all I'll say. So, Ellen, good evening, Bigfoot. Nice to see you. And Sue from New Mexico, nice to see you as well. Al, did you have a good weekend? Let's start there.
Yeah, weekend was great. Played some golf. Fairly
good.
Okay golf. Low
All
80s,
right.
Which is good.
Right.
So I was hitting the ball a little better. How about you?
I played 9 holes on Saturday, and that was about it. And I just haven't had time. Just damn work's getting in the way. It's killing me, man.
Working like a dog.
Working like a dog. Woof, woof. Who let the dogs out?
No.
So yeah, trying some new golf balls. Not new, but just different brands. And then also have a new wedge, old wedge I broke out of my bag of tricks. Tried that out. So yeah, so kind of happy with it all. So.
So what kind of golf balls are to your liking?
You know, I've been trying the Vice, V-I-C-E. I love the Pro V1s, but I've been trying the Vice and the Vice Pros, they're called. And they have some new ones out that are speckled, and I forgot what they call it. Celebration, I think, is what they call it. They also have a black golf ball, too. That one's interesting. Oh, my gosh. yeah, but so... You know, I'm trying the Vice golf ball, and I'm liking it. It's a good golf ball. That rings a bell.
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah, I picked up a couple of Vices out of the woods and used them, and they play nice. I like that.
Yes, you know, hey, it's something different to try. There's a lot of good golf balls out there. I was using the Bridgestone for a while there, the RXS, and then I keep going back to the Pro V1s, but they're so darn expensive. I'm looking for an alternative source, and the Vice Pro is really interesting. So I'm going to try it a couple of more rounds and see how they work out. So,
pretty awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And speaking
funny,
of golf,
I lost. Because I lost my wedge, and so I had to go get a new one. So I went and went to the secondhand golf store and picked up a Ping G15 sand wedge, and I love that thing.
Really?
Yes. I had a 10-degree bounce on my old Callaway wedge, which wasn't enough, but the Ping G15's probably got, I don't know, it's got a very good wide bottom bounce and much easier to use. So
good. That's
what
good.
What kind of wedge did you buy?
Well, I have a 48-degree. I changed from a 50-degree gap wedge to a 48-degree Callaway, and I'm liking it. I like the Callaway. Plus, I like the brushed nickel plate. The nickel, it's called nickel color. So it's a Jaws Raw, 48-degree.
Very nice. Well, now that we've bored the hell out of everybody who doesn't play golf.
So, really quick, there was no PGA news this week. That's why we were talking about that, I'm sure. However, the ladies were in Malaysia at the LPGA, was at the Maybach Championship, and it was a great tournament. America's rookie sensation, Rose Zhang, jumped out to a lead, and she took a 5-shot lead going into Sunday's final round. Unfortunately for Rose Zhang, the rookie, this isn't college. She did manage to shoot a 1-under-71 on Sunday, but she got passed up by Thailand's Athaya Fittipaldi and France's Celine Boutier, who each tied at 21 under par, 2 shots better than Zhang. Boutier and Fittipaldi then put up a great playoff showdown. They had 9 playoff holes to decide the championship, and they were just 9 quality holes. I mean, it was exciting. They were hitting some great shots. These ladies are really good. But in the end, Celine Boutier notched her 4th victory for the 2023 season, and she wins the Malaysia Maybach Championship. And that lady's on a roll, man. She's taking next week off, which is going to be the Toto Japan Classic. And then they head down, I think they head to Florida in a couple of weeks for the finals, the championship for the LPGA. So congratulations to Celine Boutier. She played some awesome golf, as did Thailand's Athaya Fittipaldi. Very, very impressive, that 20-year-old lady.
I missed it, so.
Oh, nine playoff holes. They would hit it. Fittipaldi hit a shot to within 3 feet of the pin, 3 feet, and Boutier gets up there next, and she knocks it to 3 feet as well on the other side of the hole. It was one shot after another. They were absolutely beautiful. I mean, it was really good to watch. And speaking of tanking, Mike Pence is out. Pence suspended his bid for president of the United States in the Republican primary race. And what a surprise, because in my opinion, Pence and Christie are only in the presidential race to attack and assail Donald Trump. They have no other vision. They have nothing else to offer except for division. And they basically have no appeal either. So both Christie and Pence have no vision, but most of all, Pence and Christie have no appeal. Be it as it may, Mike Pence is no longer in the Republican primary race, and that leaves DeSantis, Haley, Christie, Vivek Ramaswamy, Tim Scott, and President Donald Trump, who has a commanding lead over both Ron DeSantis and Nikki Haley, who are said to be the number two contenders for the Republican Party nomination. I'm not surprised Pence is out.
No, his comment was, it is not my time.
Yeah, right.
That was his quote, it is not my time. What does that mean to you?
Well, it means that he's a typical politician who is basically stating it's not his fault, and it's a graceful way of bowing out and falling into the sunset, but with the ability to stay close Okay. So what'll happen is he'll be an MSNBC or a Fox News contributor during the primary, you know, and talk about how the candidates are, and then he'll offer his opinion on President Trump. So it keeps him within arm's length of being a being in the race but not in the race. So
political arrogance. It's not same political arrogance. It's not my time. I don't want a politician whose time has come. I don't like that at all. It's arrogance. It's goodbye, Mike Pence. Don't let the door kick you in the ass on the way out.
Yeah, you know, and it's not surprising. I mean, look, in my opinion, whatever the reason why Pence and Christie are in the race for, whoever is the money people behind them, they really thought that they could start it with the mission of the establishment and to attack and assail President Trump. Can't deny that, because what else has Chris Christie offered, okay, and Pence has offered? They tried to play good cop, bad cop, with Christie being the bad cop and Mike Pence being, you know, being the soft voice conservative. But in the end, they both were placed in the race to be attack dogs. Now, the issue has become is the American people, we the people, aren't buying this. We the people can see through this facade, and we're over it. And we the people have had enough. You know, in just 1,014 days, the Biden installation, since Biden has been installed, it's been one chaos and fiasco after another. And they could say all they want to say about President Trump, but in the end, his policies were correct for America. And Mike Pence can't deny that. And I think Mike Pence has to grapple with, does he go on the offensive, which he's not capable of doing? Or does he bow out gracefully and save face? And that's what he's done. He's bowed out gracefully to save face. Chris Christie, on the other hand, has no morals and values. And basically, he's there. The money people behind him want him to continue to attack Donald Trump. I mean, it's not bad enough that the Uniparty in Washington, D.C. Are on a mission to attack Trump. I mean, over 400, you know, suits. And now these suits here that the Obama judges are bringing forth, the Democrat Party, the Uniparty, the establishment, you know, the cabal in Washington, D.C., whatever you want to call them, have a different mission, and it's backfiring. The American people are tired of politics as usual. The American people are tired of these politicians who, as you called it, what did you call it, a political... It's not my time, so it's political dishonesty.
Political arrogance.
Yeah, arrogance. Oh, arrogance, dishonesty. Yeah. So
same thing.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% on that one, Al. It's just, you know, we're watching this. You know, there should be a couple of other candidates on the Republican side who really are no longer relevant. And we'll see what happens, you know, who starts going by the wayside in the next couple of months. And you know what? As we see more candidates, will we start seeing the left wing ramping up their attacks on President Trump? And there'll be new revelations on about Trump coming out that that will be manufactured, of course. So we shall see.
Yeah, we got a couple of sports stories too. In England, if you watch hockey, which I didn't even know hockey had elite hockey in England, but they do. And Adam Johnson, he was slashed in the neck by the skate of Matt Petgrave, and he died, killed, died, whatever. He was Matt Petgrave. Came over, bent down on his right leg, kicked up his left leg, and hit Adam Johnson in the neck with his skate. And the skates are razor sharp in most instances. And in this case, it cut Adam Johnson's neck. He was bleeding all over the ice when they let him off with blood spurting everywhere like in a movie. It was disgusting to watch. And a man is dead. A player is dead because of this hit. So now there's a lot of controversy because the media, where this story goes off the rails, one is, what do you do with a player like this? We don't know because this is such an unusual event. In all my years of watching hockey, I've never seen anybody kicked this way with their skate. I've seen people when they're down on the ice and they get run over with the skate inadvertently and they'll lose a finger or get cut real bad, but never standing up. But this is what happened. The guy was standing up. The other player kicked him in the neck with a sharp skate. It had to have been intentional because there's no other way to do it, and the man died. So what do you do with the player? Well, the media, and where the problem is that the media is calling this a freak accident. So if you haven't watched the video, go and watch the video on YouTube or Twitter. It's all over the place.
Okay.
And then you decide for yourself. Now, you hadn't heard about this, and you just watched the video. What was your take, Vito?
Actually, I didn't watch that video. I watched the other video on his name?
Oh, the second story.
Second story. So, no, I've not watched it. But if you're telling me that the player got down on his knees intentionally and then he lifted his skate up and did a kicking motion at a player coming across, that's assault with a dangerous weapon, and that dangerous weapon is a skate.
Yeah. I don't know how you would, because hockey is a violent sport. There's hitting, that's part of the sport. But there's hip checking, and then there's with the stick is usually the other most common violation or penalty. When you hit somebody with the stick, it's called jabbing or spearing, and that can cause a lot of harm because you can't raise the stick above your waist and hit somebody. You just can't do it because you're going to hurt somebody. But kicking somebody in the neck is something I've never seen before. And this guy who did it, Petgrave, he's been ejected from two of the last four games for stick jabbing, that's high sticking and hitting players with the stick illegally and abusing officials. So this guy's got a history of bad behavior and excessive penalties and violence. So, but the story is where the media is trying to call this a freak accident. And the media is not even reporting it correctly, and they're protecting this guy. And it's despicable. I got problems with the media already, but for them to do this in sports, well, which they have since the sports ESPN's gone woke. But
yeah,
that's that. And the other story involves football, college football at that. What did
Go
you
ahead.
See?
Well, I've watched the Robert Griffin III Twitter post, and I see a guy that was using his shoulder to knock down a player. I mean, today, unfortunately, players don't know how to play football, and with wrapping two arms around and grab the guy and take him down. You have a player who's catching a pass from a quarterback, and he turns after catching the ball, and there's a defender standing right there who used his shoulder to knock him down. Got to give props to the receiver because he held on to the ball, even with a vicious hit as it appears to be. But apparently, this Shiloh Sanders got thrown out of the game for targeting. I don't see where he used his helmet. I see he drops his shoulder, and he nails the guy right kind of just above the sternum, and the receiver goes down pretty hard. So. But of course, and then he has to dance like an idiot. You know, that's just stupid. But what do you see?
Yeah. Well, I saw the exact same thing as you did. It was a shoulder hit. Now, if you go helmet to helmet, that's called spearing. Or if you lead with your helmet and hit a player with your helmet first, that's called spearing and is now illegal. In the olden days, you used to be able to do that all the time, and it was okay, but they've changed the rules. So that's how it is. But Sanders did lead with his shoulder, and granted it was high, But I'm sorry, but your head is going to contact something because it's connected to your shoulder. It's just the way that we're made. So, but what I found most offensive is, one, I don't think he should have been kicked out of the game for it. Two, he did his ghetto dance after the hit. Now,
yeah.
I find the ghetto dance, what that is he pumped both his arms like Arnold Schwarzenegger and then moved and danced, and it was a in-your-face to the player that he just hit and disrespecting the other team. Very unsportsmanlike conduct, in my opinion. And I think the coach should have pulled him out and gave him a dress down for the ghetto dance after the hit and to show good sportsmanship. But, and I'm not even a big Deion Sanders fan, but that's how I think it should have gone down. Now, Holger and Hank Jones of Hank Jones Polysports, they disagreed. They thought that it was spearing. So we have a little bit of a difference of opinion on this hit. Very interesting sports and culture collide.
Yeah, targeting is actually the technical term. So they thought it was a targeted hit. So you could tell by the post. So I could see why they think the helmet came into play, but when he lowers the shoulder, the head kind of goes down a little bit, but he didn't lead with his head. So,
right. That ghetto dance, got to stop that. Used to be excessive, what did they call it? Excessive
celebration.
Celebration in the end zone. Well, this is excessive celebration and disrespect to the other team. So, you know.
Yeah.
These are lessons you learn when you're young, and hopefully dad is going to take his son to the woodshed on that one. But I don't think he will for the ghetto dance because Deion Sanders is pretty much of a showman himself. But
so, you know, there's been a lot of news these last couple of weeks, and especially, you know, one, of course, being Israel. And then last week there was a mass shooting in Maine. And the mass shooting in Maine was interesting timing, to say the least, in my opinion. Always suspect of now that, you know, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have been installed, they're both anti-constitutionalists, which also makes them anti-Americans. Yeah, I said it. You know, they have abridged their oath of office. They have violated their oath of office to protect and defend the United States Constitution. And before I get into that story, but just as a reminder, the Second Amendment is quite clear. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And unfortunately today you have destructive Democrats who have a learning disability who don't really understand what the word infringed means. But when you're trying to dismantle our constitutional republic and specifically dismantling and dissolving the Bill of Rights, you have a learning disability as a leftist because your allegiance is to Marxism. You embrace the communist movement. And that's exactly what communist Kamala Harris has done. Robert Card was the active shooter, the person of interest in the mass shooting in Maine who hit two soft targets. These were gun-free zones, a bowling alley and a restaurant. Sadly, 18 people were killed. It's an interesting time of a mass shooting. In addition, the individual was a psychotic and he was on medication. He was known to authorities. And as we Americans sit here, we hear this plentiful. You know, the term known to authorities now is just a meaningless cliche by the gun-grabbing, anti-constitutional, anti-American left wing. And Robert Card was a trained firearms instructor, apparently in the U.S. Army Reserves, stationed out of Saco, Maine, S-A-C-O. It was reported that Card recently was incarcerated, or I should say he was actually admitted for mental health issues for hearing voices and threats to shoot up a National Guard base in Saco, Maine. So, you know, right then and there, there's no reason for concern, ladies and gentlemen. You know, you have a man who has mental health issues. He's given medication and goes psychotic. Gee, what a coincidence. He's a weapons expert. What a coincidence. A weapons expert is given medication and he goes psychotic and he shoots up. And the issue, the very first thing by a man who is listed as president and a vice president is to quickly go on gun control. You know, this is how shameless the left wing is. This is how soulless the left wing is. This is how hollow the left wing is. At a time when Americans are forced or focused on Israel being attacked by Islamic terrorists, this sudden, I don't know, mass shooting occurs in a remote area of Maine, Lewiston, Maine. Now, remember, the mission statement by Biden-Obama regime is to disarm the American people. And even communist Kamala Harris weighed in between her cackling and stated the following. It is a false choice to suggest we must choose between either upholding the Second Amendment or passing reasonable gun safety laws to save lives. Congress can and must make background checks universal, pass red flag laws, ban high-capacity magazines, and renew the assault weapon ban. In the meantime, Biden and I are not waiting around. No, of course, they're going to do something unconstitutional as usual. Through the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention, we will continue to work to save lives. We do not have a moment to spare, nor a life to spare, unless, of course, you're an unborn, you know, in a Democrat's female's body, and a biological female at that, because men who think they're females can't have babies, at least right now anyways, unless you're an illegal alien who's dying while invading America or being raped by a drug cartel and killed. So they don't have a moment to spare. Well, I think we should take a quick look at Communist Kamala Harris's choice of wording. It's a false choice to suggest we must choose between either upholding the Second Amendment or passing reasonable gun safety laws. Well, folks, I don't think we have a choice between upholding the Second Amendment. It says a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, I'm not sure what kind of learning disability Communist Kamala Harris has, and I'm not sure how much more anti-constitutional Communist Kamala Harris can be. We're not weighing in to either uphold the Second Amendment or pass reasonable gun safety. That's not the issue. The issue is that the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Communist Kamala Harris has taken the oath of office no less than four times, serving in the United States Senate and being sworn in as Vice President of the United States. That oath is to protect and defend the United States Constitution. She has simply pissed on the U.S. Constitution. She has simply slapped in the face we the people. She has stepped on and stomped on our founding fathers for what they wrote. Oh, and by the way, in the meantime, Biden and I are not waiting around. Through the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention, excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, through the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention, that does not give you the right to abridge the Second Amendment. That office does not give you the right to abridge the Bill of Rights. Now, just because these left-wing lunatics, these left-wing anti-Americans set up an office in the White House called Gun Violence Prevention doesn't mean you get to usurp the U.S. Constitution. Now, I don't know at what point the American people say enough is enough, but we clearly have two anti-constitutionalists who are leading the rest of the executive branch who are anti-constitutionalists. Just because you set up a White House office called Gun Violence Prevention doesn't mean this particular office can do an end around on We the People. And the arrogance, okay, of these anti-constitutionalists that have been installed since January 20, 2021 is anti-American. Now, I don't know why this arrogance is allowed to occur, other than, of course, the U.S. media is controlled by the Democrat National Committee and not the Democratic National Committee, okay? There is nothing democratic about the Democrat Party. The Democrat Party are left-wing. They are Marxist. They are anti-Americans. Continue to use their office to usurp the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights. How dare the Vice President of the United States make such a statement? It is a false choice to suggest we must choose between either upholding the Second Amendment. Excuse me, Kamala Harris. You took an oath of office to protect and defend the United States Constitution. If you cannot uphold the U.S. Constitution, then it's incumbent upon you to resign. Okay, go and live in Russia if you want to have the U.S. You want the government to control what type of weapons the people can buy. Matter of fact, better yet, Communist Kamala, why don't you move to Communist China, where people don't have rights? You'll be extremely happy there, where you can limit speech, you can make sure that a Communist Chinese citizen doesn't own a gun, that they have no rights to meet and or to petition their government for a redress of grievances, just like the people of Hong Kong did and was summarily beat down by the communist government. This is a Democrat Party person's wet dream. So we can now know that one of the two installed individuals, Communist Kamala Harris, believes it's a false choice to uphold the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. No wonder the Biden-Harris-Obama regime have started all kinds of anti-constitutional offices, such as the Office of Ministry of Truth. That has since been supposedly disbanded under the Department of Homeland Security. And that was to define what speech is acceptable by the government, which is a direct violation of the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. But let's go back to the Second Amendment. This should be very telling as well, how the destructive Democrats' minds think. And if you and me, we the people, should ever suggest upholding the Second Amendment is a false choice, they should be put in Gitmo for treason. How dare a vice president of the United States makes such an inflammatory and offensive statement. Now it's acceptable to say that you're making a false choice to uphold the Second Amendment? So we should make a false choice in upholding freedom of religion? How about making a false choice in upholding free speech? Because the government wants to dictate what speech is acceptable. And now they're going to dictate which weapons are acceptable before they go back and they disarm the American people, like California has done in raising prices as far as adding an excessive tax on the purchase of weapons. You see, this is how leftists do it. This is how these communists do it. They will disarm you one way or another, especially if you make the false choice of acting to uphold the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. I'll tell you, Al, it couldn't be any clearer how the destructive Democrat Party is intending on dismantling our constitutional republic. They are seeking to dismantle the Bill of Rights. They are attacking the First Amendment. They've attacked the Second Amendment. They've absolutely rendered the Sixth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution useless. I mean, there are still people who are incarcerated since January 6, 2021. And you're telling us that the Sixth Amendment allows for a speedy and fair trial? Bull, not under this regime. Not under this anti-constitutional regime. But let's make more gun-free zones in America, okay? So that more and more soft targets can be hit and more people can be programmed to snap, to go into a psychotic state. And, of course, we'll never know because he dies of self-inflicted wounds. Interesting. What timing there, huh?
Incredible. But meanwhile, and you've got socialist rep from New York City, Jamal Bowman. He gets away with interfering with an official proceeding with a $1,000 fine and charges dropped in 3 months for deliberately pulling a fire alarm to stop an official proceeding in a federal building, whereas the J6 political prisoners, they got felony convictions, and he just had over a year in prison for the same offense. Now, if you remember, Representative Jamal Bowman, he was the elected official who yells and screams at opponents in halls of Congress, and now this. He and his Democrat colleagues think they're above the law, and this kind of lawlessness without appropriate punishment shows this. Now, our Department of Justice engages in lawfare, which is ignoring law when it applies to corrupt and criminal Democrats, while politicizing it to prosecute people who disagree with their leftist and socialist agenda. Now, compare what Jamal Bowman did to Connie Meigs. She's a 60-year-old woman from Dinellon, Florida. She was sentenced to 15 months in prison and 36 months of supervised release. She was convicted of conspiring to obstruct an official proceeding during the J6 event, same as Jamal Bowman. Ethan Nordine, 32, of Auburn, Washington, was sentenced to 18 years in prison, and he was found guilty of conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding, same as Jamal Bowman. Lee Kelly, 37, of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, she was sentenced to 30 months in prison and 36 months of supervised release in order to pay $7,000, and he was found guilty at trial of obstructing an official proceeding, same as Jamal Bowman. And the last one is William Calhoun Jr., 60, of Americus, Georgia. He was sentenced to 18 months in prison for obstruction of an official proceeding, just like Jamal Bowman. The DOJ said Calhoun was a practicing attorney in Georgia when sentenced. Is that two tiers of justice? Is Jamal Bowman getting away basically with murder? Well, not murder technically, but it's the equivalent of judicial murder that he's getting. There's precedent set not 6 months to a year ago with the J6 convictions, and Jamal Bowman was found guilty of the exact same thing and was only given a $1,000 fine, charges dropped for pulling a fire alarm.
Well, you know, you and I kind of, we had a little brief correspondence back and forth about this, but isn't it interesting how the DNC, the U.S. DNC media did not show the entire footage of Jamal Bowman? Now, Jamal Bowman was a principal, a high school or a school principal, okay? So, obviously, he knows his colors, red, he knows green, he knows yellow, and fire alarms are generally have a red color to them. And he knows English, okay? So, you know, as a teacher, he understands and comprehends the English language. What the US DNC media does not show you with regards to Jamal Bowman is Jamal Bowman removes all the signs on the door prior to pulling the fire alarm. And you see, unlike the J6 individuals, where Nancy Pelosi had her Capitol Police remove all barriers and open up the doors to the U.S. Capitol in order to stop the Electoral College count, Jamal Bowman, Representative Jamal Bowman, intentionally took the signs down on the door and then proceeded to pull the fire alarm. He wasn't looking for an exit. He was interrupting a House vote. Now, Jamal Bowman is just like Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi instructed the Capitol Police to remove all barriers, open the U.S. Capitol doors, and wave people, the people that were in attending the rally, into the U.S. Capitol with one express purpose: to stop the Electoral College count. And it did. Because who knows what the state of Arizona would have done? Would they have objected? Would the electors for the state of Arizona, who is about to cast their votes, would they have objected to their state's votes, thereby setting up a contestation of the 2020 election? And of course, Nancy Pelosi, being part of the swamp, part of the Washington, D.C. syndicate, was not about to have that happen. The idea was, the perception was, to stop all counts and then come back and everyone act as if, oh my God, our life, we're in danger, and now it's incumbent upon us to vote. And guess what? They suspended and they thwarted any objections by the electorate. Now, it was okay for the electorate in 2000 to object, in 2001 to object to George W. Bush winning that race. It was okay in 2004 when the electorate objected to George W. Bush beating John Lurch Kerry. It was okay for Senator Dianne Feinstein to not want to certify the presidential race. It's okay. It's okay. But then Nancy Pelosi engages the best ruse ever, in my opinion. And boy, more and more facts are coming forward as to who is responsible for individuals entering the United States Capitol. And yes, what Jamal Bowman did is exactly what Nancy Pelosi did. She removed all, she had all barriers removed. She had all doors open. And what did Jamal Bowman do? Representative Bowman removed all barriers. He removed all signage. And then he proceeded, this former school principal turned, specifically went to the fire alarm and pulled it, knowing full well the U.S. House vote would be interrupted. He knew full well what he was doing. And he's faced with a $1,000 fine and 3 months of staying out of trouble. Oh, wow. Wow. Just slap the guy on the wrist. And I'm sure the Democrat Party is paying his fine and laughing all the way. Well, we pulled another one over the American people. Good old Uniparty sitting there and, yeah, here's my $20 there. Jamal, good job. Tell you. God, if it wasn't for corruption, there would be no activity in Washington, D.C., would there be?
No. No. It's the foundation of politics these days, it seems.
Yeah, it really does. Well, you know, Al, I didn't put this in the show notes, but last week I was reading Bigfoot's Place.blogspot.com, and there was an article in the Daily Caller. And the article is titled, Out of Bullets, Biden administration fears the return of $5 per gallon after they drain the strategic oil reserves. Now, I think the Daily Caller saying fear? No, I'm sorry. The Biden regime wants the return of $5 per gallon gas. Okay, but October 25th story by Nick Pope. Some officials within the Biden administration reportedly fear the possible return of high gas prices, especially given their decision to release huge quantities of oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve in 2021 and 2022. The New York Times reported Wednesday. Oh, wow. So the New York Times finally decided to wake up and report on something that's a national security issue that was basically activated by the Obama, I'm sorry, by the Biden-Harris-Obama regime. The Biden regime officials are sensitive to the possibility that gas prices could exceed $5 per gallon again, which occurred briefly in 2022, according to the Times. The administration tapped into the Strategic Petroleum Reserve to bring down prices then, but they have not offset those releases. And the steps taken to bring down gas prices in 2022 may not work as effectively this time around in the event of fresh price shock. They succeeded last year in the second half, but this year I think they've kind of run out of bullets. Amrita Sen, director of the Research of Energy Aspect, told the Times of the administration SPR drawdowns, that Strategic Petroleum Reserve drawdowns, they got a little overconfident that prices would stay low, she continued, adding, and in some ways they've missed the boat. Okay, folks, this is where I take exception to that analogy. Now, there are supposedly smart people in Washington, D.C., right? We're told like Hillary Rodham Clinton's the smartest woman in the world. We're told that Barack Hussein Sator Obama is a smart man. We're even told at one point that Joe Biden is a smart man, although he has an IQ of a turtle. The statement that they've succeeded last year in the second half, but this year I think they've kind of run out of bullets. They got a little overconfident that prices would stay low, adding that in some ways they've missed the boat. So let me get this straight. On January 20th, 2021, the Biden regime, Joe Biden, and the Obama alumni who make up that regime decided that they were going to take America off of energy independence. And at the time, a barrel of oil was around $40 a barrel, I believe. Gas prices were at anywhere from $1.69 in South Carolina to, on the East Coast, $1.89, $2.15 a gallon. The average gas price, I think, was at $2.12 a gallon. And that would be using California at $4 or $5 a gallon even at that time. So the administration got a little overconfident that prices would stay low. So either the Biden regime are deaf, dumb, retarded, and stupid, or their intentional acts are doing exactly what are intended. And that is, you took America off of energy independence. We now are dependent upon foreign sources of oil once again, such as OPEC, such as Russia, such as Venezuela, such as even Iran, even though the United States has the Iran deal, which means that we are subject to not trading with Iran. And yet the Biden-Harris-Obama regime were buying oil from Iran. Unbelievable. The Biden-Harris-Obama regime are buying oil from Russia. They bought 20 million barrels of oil to deposit into the Strategic Petroleum Reserve at somewhere around $79 a barrel after President Trump filled the capacity around $25 a barrel. Democrats slammed Trump administration in 2020 for attempting to top off the Strategic Petroleum Reserve at a time when prices were around $25 per barrel as COVID-19 lockdown slashed demands, saying that a replenishment would be a handout for big oil. Really? We replenished the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. There's something to the name, Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Now, there are approximately 714 million barrels of oil in the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Dopey Joe and his anti-American regime, we are down below 350 million barrels of oil. That means that we are somewhere around 364 million barrels under the old math deficient, thanks to Joe Biden and the Obama alumni regime, who decided that they were going to be beholden to the climate change hoax that the world body is setting, whether it's the United Nations under the Paris Accord, whether it's the World Economic Forum, who's looking for a great reset. Remember, I think it was Klaus Schwab who said, who stated something to the effect that the pandemic provided an opportunity to reset the world. I don't buy for one second that the Biden-Harris-Obama regime got overconfident that prices would stay low. Don't buy it for a second, because there are too many red flags with regards to that. And they, the Biden-Harris-Obama regime, they enabled those red flags. They stopped the leases. They stopped the drilling. They made it a strong disincentive for drilling in the United States. And furthermore, they ended America's energy independence. They intentionally ended America's energy independence. Why? Because it was working under Donald Trump. And the mission of the Biden-Harris-Obama regime is to dismantle everything Trump. And now we're supposed to believe that they're ignorant. Now we're supposed to believe they got a little overconfident, when in fact they signed on to the world global climate change hoax. And that was to eliminate fossil fuel. I didn't say that. Joe Biden said that. I didn't say that. Joe Biden said he was going to eliminate fossil fuel. Watch me. So that means that he and his radical anti-American regime, which are all Obama alumni, signed on to a radical program to America's energy independence. Last week, the Department of Energy announced that it wants to buy millions of barrels to replenish the Strategic Petroleum Reserve at a price point of $79 a barrel. The spot price for a barrel of West Texas Intermediate crude oil on Wednesday stood at $86 a barrel, according to commodity.com. Now, folks, here's where you know that the global cabal, here's where you know that the establishment in Washington, D.C. intentionally dismantled Donald Trump. Democrats slammed the Trump administration in 2020 for attempting to top off the Strategic Petroleum Reserve at a time when prices were around $25 per barrel. President crudely replenishes the Strategic Petroleum Reserve at $25 a barrel, costing the American taxpayer one quarter of what Biden would be filling the Strategic Petroleum Reserve for recklessly draining the Strategic Petroleum Reserve to artificially lower gas prices. In the meantime, Americans are paying the highest prices at the pump ever. That would be middle class people. That would be working poor people. That would be working Americans. That would be rich. That would be poor. All across the board. Spot price for a barrel of West Texas oil is $86 a barrel. So who is handing out to a big oil? It wasn't President Trump at $25 a barrel. If President Numbnuts, Joe Biden, is replenishing the Strategic Petroleum Reserve at a minimum of $79 a barrel, and President Trump did it at $25 a barrel, who is giving a handout to big oil? You see, the Democrats had a carefully crafted plan. Anything President Trump did, it was attempting to buy business off. Anything that President Dummy does, Joe Biden, oh, he's working for the people. It's the middle class people. Horseshit. Okay? You've got Joe Biden out there buying oil, violating the Iran deal. You've got Joe Biden signing on to arming the Ukrainians. We're spending hundreds of billions of dollars to send to Ukraine. In the meantime, Joe Biden and the Obama alumni that encircle Joe Biden are buying oil from Russia at $75, $80 a barrel. So the White House and his DOE did not respond to the request for comment. Oh, that's a fucking surprise. You know, that's the theme with the less than honest Biden regime. They offer empty sound bites, meaningless cliches, as well as they avoid, they deflect, and they distract from the truth. The Biden and his anti-American regime are anything but honest. Not only is Biden and his corrupt globalist regime team not honest, but the entire Democrat Party are compromised of liars and propaganda artists and thieves, and they're selling out we the people. They're selling out the United States of America. You know, they sat there, the Democrats, and they slammed President Trump and his administration for topping off the Strategic Petroleum Reserve at $25 a barrel. And in the meantime, America was energy independent. And today, you've got President Moron Joe Biden draining the Strategic Petroleum Reserve to the tune of 360 million barrels or more. And, of course, the media, you know, they're stuck on this common core math, okay? Biden opted to release 180 million barrels of oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve in late 2021 and 2022. He was actually trying to manipulate the elections, okay, the midterms. So it caused a political headache for Biden and the Democrats in the months leading up to the 2022 midterm elections. Approximately 6 million barrels released from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve in 2021 were ultimately sold to China. Imagine that. So Biden sells 6 million barrels of our Strategic Petroleum Reserve that we buy for $25, that we bought for $25 a barrel, and he sells it to communist China. Now, folks, that's 6 million barrels. And supposedly, Obama released 180 million barrels of oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Now, mind you, the SPR, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, holds 714 million barrels. There's 340 million barrels of oil in the Strategic Petroleum Reserve today. So let me ask you, where is the other 350 million barrels? I'd like to know. If we have 714 million barrels, and Biden apparently used 186 million barrels, where is the other 180 million barrels of oil? Because, you know, 714 million minus 180 is 534 million barrels. But we have 350 million barrels, 184 million barrels short. And we can't account for that? No wonder why they couldn't find $2 trillion in the Pentagon. Because the Biden regime's math absolutely sucks. And, of course, the media is so far in the bag for the left-wingers that they're not even questioning where 184 million barrels of oil have gone from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Remember, by their own admission, in 2020, President Trump topped off the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. That means he filled it to capacity. See, this is not an honest regime. Joe Biden is not an honest man, and you wonder why he was installed to do what he did. And now they're supposedly shocked in the Biden-Harris-Obama regime. PEC announces that they're cutting $1 million barrels of production per day to the end of the year. And they, the Biden-Harris-Obama regime, are shocked that gas prices are going to go up. Well, let's see. Under the old formula, if you're in business, if you cut production and the demand remains high, that means prices rise. You know, income minus expenses equals a profit or a loss. It's no different than production. You cut production and the demand remains high. What happens? The price starts increasing. I'm telling you, we are not dealing with honest handlers here. The Biden, Harris, Obama handlers, who are all Obama alumni, are dishonest people. They're liars, they're cheaters, and they are stealing from we the people. The bottom line is, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve was drained of 364 million barrels of oil since January 20, 2021. Why? Where has it gone? You see, no one, not one person in the U.S. DNC media is asking that question. Joe Biden and his anti-American globalist handlers have sold America out to the New World Order. They've sold out to the World Economic Forum. They've sold out to the United Nations. They've sold out to the Paris Accord. And they have created a national security nightmare, and they've done it intentionally. So thank you, Bigfoot'sPlace.blogspot.com. For having this article in your summary of news to choose from the Daily Caller. And once again, the U.S. posed mainstream media, the legacy media, does not report on this. The negligence of Joe Biden. Not only has this man created a domestic policy crisis, he's creating a foreign policy crisis. His national security crisis that he's creating is leaving America oil dry. And they're wondering, you know, how could this be? This is a shocker. Oh, it's a shocker because, you know, they're out of bullets, really. OPEC announces a 1 million barrel a day cut in production back in June. And your response is to do nothing. And now you're sitting here, sitting back, and you're saying, I can't believe, I got a brain freeze from my vanilla ice cream cone. I can't believe we're going to get $5 a gallon on the horizon. It might exceed that. Really? So the option then is to release more oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve to the point where it's down to levels that we haven't seen in over 65 years? Wow. Wow. Al, I tell you, this is a national security concern, and there are so many, there's so much chaos going on in the United States and around the world, and for the Biden regime to be this negligent, it should warrant impeachment charges. But the government today is so dishonest in Washington, D.C., that they're so fixated on Donald Trump because he did the right thing and he put America first. Biden is doing the bidding for those that despise our constitutional republic.
Well, our Congress has had plenty of opportunity to file articles of impeachment against President Biden, but they haven't done it.
That's correct.
I don't see them doing it. I just don't. Maybe this new Speaker of the House will make that happen. Could be. Could McCarthy could have held it back because he ended up being a rhino in the most despicable of ways. So maybe this new Speaker will be the beginning of things changing for the better, perhaps.
Well, you know, the important ending to this article is really simple, okay? And remember the term transparency, because that's what Biden had promised was transparency, which is just an empty cliche. But here's the very last sentence in the article. The White House and the Department of Energy did not respond immediately to requests for comment. Well, that's a fucking surprise. I don't know. I found that story especially fascinating because as I'm reading it, the numbers don't add up. And the fact that they released 186 admitting to releasing 186 million barrels of oil to artificially lower gas prices, and we're still missing another 184 million barrels of oil. And nobody's asking the question, where did that other 184 million of barrel of oil come from? Where'd they go? Where is it? Where's it gone? No one is asking the question.
Well, 2.5 years ago, we were a net energy producer.
Thank you.
We were drilling, drill, baby, drill, and we controlled our own destiny. In fact, our ability to make enough fossil fuels to provide the energy needs for our country meant less money was going to Saudi Arabia and other terrorist nations, and the world was a safer place. Now it's
yes,
just
it
the
was.
Opposite because President Biden, the first thing he did is he flipped everything that President Trump did, good and the best things, he just turned them around because he wanted to. He wants America not to be energy efficient because we could be again very easily.
You know, America is a land of opportunity. It's made up of individuals who are inspired, who are innovative. And you know, I'm not a big fan personally of Bill Gates, but you see what Steve Jobs, Paul Allen, Bill Gates has done in changing the technology in the United States and in the world, and the fact that it started in a garage. And you take a look at the cell phone industry and how we now use the term cell phone and not, you know, landlines and home phones and the amount of ingenuity that has occurred. You can go back to the Iron Age and you can go back to the 20s and even though it was a bit primitive, how the gas engine evolved, and how it evolved to a rotary engine, how it revolved now to a steam engine of a train. And I mean, just the evolution and the ingenuity of man, especially here in the United States, we have an opportunity over the next 100 years to be quite innovative. And that is being stemmed by a movement that wants total control. We're set to have 150 years of reserves of oil right under our own land. And it's not being utilized, as we have these globalists now who are beholden to the World Economic Forum, to the United Nations, to NATO, for our existence. And they're squashing the American dream intentionally because they don't like American exceptionalism. They don't like America first mentality. They'd like to have a globalist mentality. They'd like to have a democracy mentality, not a republic mentality. And they've done their damnedest to sabotage the U.S. economy. Just over the last 1,014 days, and they plunged domestic and foreign issues into chaos. We watched as the U.S. economy started to contract and we had the highest inflation in 40 years. That should have absolutely crucified any politician in the executive branch. Their failed economic policies have led to the worst economy in 40 years. And that should have taken Susan Rice out immediately. It should have taken, why is it now that the domestic policy advisor who replaces Susan Rice and Neera Tanden, her radicalism is rewarded? And then we can look on the foreign policy front. The person elevated to the foreign policy advisor has been an abysmal failure, along with Joe Biden, who is said to be a foreign policy genius. He's anything but a genius. But Jake Sullivan has been an abysmal failure. You know, Biden and Sullivan, but Sullivan being an Obama alumni, they failed the American people with the fall of Afghanistan. 13 dead American soldiers, and they've not been held accountable for that. We watched Russia walk into Ukraine, and supposedly there's now a Ukrainian war, and we're funding the Ukrainians while we're passively funding the Russians by buying oil because we were taken off of energy independence.
Excuse me.
And now you've got Hamas. Hamas invades Israel right after, a 1 week following the less than intelligent Jake Sullivan talking about how the Biden-Harris regime has controlled the Middle East. I mean, just 1 week after Jake Sullivan offered his meaningless sermon, yet another domestic or another foreign policy failure by Jake Sullivan and Joe Biden. Of course, all the while over the last 1,014 days since Jake Sullivan has been named the foreign policy advisor and the less than intelligent Joe Biden has been installed as president, communist China has flexed their communist muscles around the world. And all the while, you've got these individuals in the United States government who are professing that everything's great. Everything is rosy. You know, the economy's doing fantastic. And if you're a middle-class individual, middle-class American who's working, it's great for you. You know, you've seen your utility prices double. You've seen your grocery prices double. You've seen your gas prices up 70% to 200%. So everything is great. You've not gotten a raise. You're using your credit cards more often, and you're getting further and further into debt. I mean, it's the first time that America's debt for credit cards is over $1 trillion, and you can thank, you know, the Biden, Harris, Rice, Obama efforts. And now on the foreign policy front, we've had absolute chaos ensue, absolute chaos since January 20, 2021. To the point where our allies know that Joe Biden is weak, that the Biden-Harris regime is weak. You have Jake Sullivan who was pounding his chest on October the 7th, the 2nd, about how they've controlled the Middle East, yet they were funding Hamas, yet they were funding Iran. And yes, they were funding Iran by buying Iranian oil. They were funding Iran by not holding them accountable to the Iran deal, where President Trump had the Iranians and the Russians reeling thanks to Biden, Harris, Obama, Sullivan, Rice. They've emboldened the enemy, emboldened the theocratic terrorist regime of Iran, and their economy rebounded. And you can also thank communist China for doing so because of the feckless policies, the weakness of the Biden-Harris regime. The weakness which communist China understands and they're taking full advantage of, to the tune of buying 1 million barrels of oil a day from Iran. Remember, it was President Trump who the establishment despises had the Iranian government reeling. He was holding the Iran deal. He was holding the Iranians accountable under the Iran deal. He cornered them. And in the process of omitting Iran and the Palace territory, he was able to get deals together that would enable and help Israel grow. And it did. Except for one thing. The Washington, D.C. syndicate did not like President Trump. And they ensured that President Trump would be replaced by an idiot, a useful idiot, a hollow and soulless man, a man that I call the wicked man of the Proverbs 6, verses 12 through 19, Joe Biden, has a proud look and a lying tongue. Sows discord, and he sows discord here in the United States. He sows division in the United States. And all the while, he projects weakness to our adversaries. So much so that Russian President Putin decides to invade Ukraine. And what's the response from Joe Biden? Nothing. Nothing. oh, well, let's give $100 billion, $40 billion. You know, wait till the, you know, turn the faucet on of money, of American taxpayer money that we don't have, and plunge America further and further into debt. Because what is the Communist Manifesto? It is to create unsustainable debt, and it's exactly what the Uniparty is doing in Washington, D.C., led by the perfect puppet, Joe Biden. And now we've watched Hamas, who was funded by Iran. Thank you, Joe Biden. Thank you, Barack Obama. Thank you, John Kerry, who undermined President Trump's administration. John Kerry should be in Gitmo for treason. Actually, he should be hung by his neck until death for treason, for working behind the scenes with the Iranian government. But thank you, Joe Biden, for enabling Iran. Iran arming Hamas. Hamas, a terrorist organization. The United States State Department said so. 1989, Hamas was declared a terrorist organization. October 8, 1989, Hezbollah was declared a terrorist organization. Hezbollah is funded by Iran. And on October 7th, the Hamas-led Gazans went across the border and killed 1,400 Israelis, took 299 hostages. And now the protests in America and around the world is to defend the Palestinians. Really? Oh, it was Rashida Tlaib and her gang who were leading the cheer to push Israel into the Mediterranean Sea. Rashida Tlaib, Rashida, mother effer Tlaib, is doubling down on the lies and the smears. Her support for terrorists has never been ambiguous, and the terrorists love her back. A Canary Mission report documents some of the intersections between Tlaib and Hamas. Hamas is a terrorist organization. It's declared terrorist organization by the United States State Department. And now, within the United States government, in the U.S. House of Representatives, a sitting member of the U.S. House of Representatives is actively raising money for Hamas. There was an organization called the Islamic Association for Palestine, was shut down in early 2000 for raising money for terrorist organizations, including Hamas. They were shut down. Unfortunately, those individuals who are in the upper echelon of the Islamic Association for Palestine were not deported as they should have been. And what they did was start this organization called the Council on American Islamic Relations, CARE. Omar Ahmad and Nihad Awad, two active members of the Islamic Association for Palestine who were raising money for terrorist organizations. And because we bring that out, we're labeled as Islamophobes. Because we bring that out, the Southern Poverty Law Center, those whores at the SPLC, declare us a terrorist organization. They declare us hate mongers. Well, Canary Mission can confirm that Rashida Mother Effer Tlaib has extensive fundraising ties to Hamas supporters. She employed no less than three Hamas-linked activists to fundraise for her 2018 election campaign, one of whom spent 8 months in prison for his alleged connections to Hamas. Folks, you can't make this stuff up. And of course, the legacy media, who is in the bag for the Democrat Party, covers these actions up. Canary Mission confirms that Tlaib has extensive fundraising ties to Hamas. That includes Salah Sarsour, who was reportedly a Hamas activist who served 8 months in prison in 1995 for his connections to the terror group, including giving Hamas members money, as well as Rafiq Jabir, a co-founder of CARE, who hosted Tlaib fundraiser directed to Hamas front groups in the United States to promote the Holy Land Foundation in every way we can and to distribute Hamas propaganda materials, including in August of 2001, editorial that advocated martyrdom operations and the killing of Jewish people. Yeah, the killing of Jewish people. And now they've infiltrated colleges and universities within the United States. And they are manipulating minds. But what can't be disputed is the fact that Hamas is designated a foreign terrorist organization, an FTO. And if the Speaker of the United States House of Representatives, the new Speaker of the House, does not bring charges against Rashida Tlaib, and if they find that Ilhan Omar is doing the very same, then we know that we have a corrupt government for sure. We have one party. We have a uniparty. And on October 8, 1997, Hamas was designated a foreign terrorist organization by the United States government. And a sitting member of the United States House of Representatives is actively raising money for a designated foreign terrorist organization. Hamas is no different than Hezbollah. It's no different than Al-Qaeda, who is also listed as a foreign terrorist organization. The Palestinian Liberation Front is listed as a foreign terrorist organization. The Palestine Islamic Jihad organizations. And yet, and Al-Shabaab, remember September 11, 2012, called Benghazi? A bunch of guys out for an evening walk, members of Al-Shabaab, who are listed as and designated a foreign terrorist organization by the United States government on March 18, 2008, just 4 years prior to that evening walk on September 11, 2012 in Benghazi, which got our U.S. ambassador killed, Christopher Stevens, which got a CIA agent killed, Sean Smith, which got two Navy SEALs killed. Bunch of guys out for an evening walk. That's what we're told. I'm sure Charles Woods is ecstatic over the fact that it was just a bunch of guys out for an evening walk, Hillary. I mean, these terrorist sympathizers, whether it's Hillary Rotten Clinton, whether it's the entire Democrat Party, whether it's Rashida Mother Effort Tlaib or Omar Ahmad or Alexandria Cortez or Cori Bush. It's one thing to throw your support with an organization like, let's say, the SPLC, but it's another thing to be supportive of foreign terrorist organizations by the United States government. And supposedly, Al, all these individuals who are supporting Palestine, like what happened at the Russian airport, okay, the Palestinians were charging they wanted to charge the tarmac where Jews were said to be flying. Excuse me, if they're Palestinians and they are that much engaged in jihad, it's not just Hamas. That means that the entire Palestine supports the elimination of Israel. You declared war on Israel. I got three quick quotes from Golda Meir that are absolutely just fantastic. Of course, I also have a clip from Jamal Jayapal, that dumb individual. Here we go. Golda Meir. I understand the Arabs wanted to wipe us out, but do they really expect us to cooperate? I find that quote to be absolutely magnificent at this point. Even back then in 1970s, they understood the Arabs wanted to wipe them out. But do they really expect them to cooperate? And apparently that's what the United Nations and the Organization of Islamic Cowards expect. That's exactly what these colleges and these kids in college think that Israel should do, is just expect them to cooperate being exterminated. Golda Meir, the other quote, if we choose to have a choice between being dead and pitied and being alive with a bad image, we'd rather be alive and have the bad image. And then, of course, the ultimate quote from Golda Meir. We can forgive the Arabs for killing our children, but we can never forgive them for forcing us to kill their children. And on October 7th, had Hamas not crossed the border and invaded Israel and killed 1,400 Israelis, this would have never happened. But apparently, we're not supposed to understand why Israel is angry and Israel is defending herself. This is all brought on by Hamas, which was funded in part by Iran, and it was also fueled by the word of Allah. Go ahead, Al.
Islam is Islam. They're following Islamic doctrine to a T, and you nailed it. They came over and they killed 1,400 people, because since 2005, Israel withdrew from the Gaza Strip. They had communities in Gaza. They withdrew from those in the name of peace. Since 2007, Israel's embarked on a policy of, let's say, living in coexistence with each other, and that meant what they used to call mowing the lawn. When the Islamic terrorism would get out of control, they'd mow the lawn, take out the heads, tap down the jihadis until there was quiet, and then it would last for a year or two, and then it would start to elevate, and then they'd mow the lawn again, and that was the policy of Israel. But Israel ran into a problem, is that in the last decade, Israel became very dependent on technology, the billion-dollar fence we heard so much about, and all the electronics on the fence made Israel safe. But in fact, the Palestinians in Gaza, they just drove their bulldozers through the fencing, and for 2 years they were preparing for this attack, and they caught Israel sleeping. But now Israel is awake, and the people that you're mentioning that are calling for a ceasefire, that's what these protests are all about, is one, a show of force, so people will see in these towns where there's thousands of pro-Hamas, pro-jihadi protesters taking to the streets, it's a show of force that we are here, and we are active, and we're ready to fight. Now, these protests are also showing that their view is popular. Israel is not. But Israel is going to continue to fight. And the one overriding fact, Vito, that people don't mention is that in the 1967 war, the Six-Day War, Israel won the Gaza Strip in battle and gave it back to the Palestinians in the name of peace. Egypt didn't want it. People also forget to talk about how Egypt has closed their borders to the PLO and to the Hamas supporters, and that Jordan has also closed their borders to their fellow Muslim Hamas supporters. That's even now, more telling, is when fellow Muslims close the door and they blame Israel for it. And then what's even worse is that Hamas, on memory, the Middle East Media Research Institute, where their sole function is to translate Arabic media into English, there was a Hamas leader who said that the tunnels are only for Hamas, not for the people, not for the civilians. They're on their own. The tunnels are used to protect Hamas. They don't even, they don't give a rat's ass about their own Muslim, fellow Muslims. You're saying?
I'd like you to expand a little bit on something, and if you happen to know, why would Jordan and Egypt decline to take their fellow Muslims? These are refugees now. Why would they decline now also, let me clarify one thing. Jordan and Egypt are also part of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, made up of 57 Islamic states, including the Palestinian territory. So why aren't they taking their fellow Muslims?
Well, I suspect in 1970, the King of Jordan had to expel Yasser Arafat and the PLO. And he did it in a brutal fashion, killing thousands of Palestinians because Yasser Arafat was engaged in a coup to overtake the kingdom and take over Jordan, because most of these Palestinians are Jordanians, Egyptians. There's really no such thing as a Palestinian. They were a made-up people by Yasser Arafat. Well, in 1970, the King of Jordan kicked Yasser Arafat and these Transjordanians out of Jordan. And then Egypt, on the other hand, has been filling up their tunnels because they know that there are a bunch of terrorists that cause Hamas and their supporters and the PLO cause unrest in every country that they've ever been in, including Egypt. Egypt had to expel them. Egypt closes the tunnels going into Egypt every chance that they get, and they close their borders to them because they don't want their civil unrest in their country. The Palestinians, for lack of a better word, are a group of people that nobody wants.
Because of their terrorist ways?
Yeah, they're jihadis. But they become a useful tool of idiots to hassle Israel and attack Israel. And they're getting funded by Iran to do this. But the whole glitch in all that was these Abraham Accords that President Trump put together. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, it's like a cold day in hell when pigs fly. Well, pigs flew in the Middle East when Donald Trump was able to have Israel, Bahrain, the UAE form an alliance together. Israel had formed an alliance with their Arab Muslim neighbors. They were this close within a hand's grasp of having the same alliance with the Saudi Arabians. And as soon as that alliance was within reach, Iran pulled the trigger and escalated, had Hamas escalate the violence to derail this alliance between Israel and Saudi Arabia. And that's what nobody's talking about.
You know, that just, here you go. Okay. That just gave me a thought, an epiphany. There are some people who say that the Abraham Accord was naive thinking on the part of Trump, but Trump made a very good deal in trying to bring peace to the region. Now, think about this, and sorry to be long-winded. The Obama, Harris, and Biden, Obama regime have sought ways to undo everything Trump did. They couldn't go in and just dismantle the Abraham Accord because it would have meant that the Jews in America could easily walk away from the Democrat Party once the fool Joe Biden had dismantled the Abraham Accord. So what better way to obstruct the Abraham Accord than to sign on to a terrorist organization like Hamas and Iran attack Israel? Because we know that through Sharia, Islamic states will side with Islamic states. And we are seeing that. We are seeing the powers to be in Saudi Arabia calling for a ceasefire. Oh, well, I mean, Israel has a right to defend himself. And when she does, the Arabs suddenly don't like it, but they all stick together. We don't hear a condemnation by Saudi Arabia of Hamas and the horrible atrocities they performed in killing Israelis. We don't hear it from Turkey. And once again, you've got the Islamic nations, all 57 of those Islamic nations under the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, all end up sticking together. So what better way for the Biden-Harris-Obama regime to dismantle the Abraham Accord than to ensure that there was some sort of attack on Israel? And now look at the cries and the statements from the wicked man Joe Biden about a two-state solution. And suddenly the two-state solution is supposed to be a solution. Unless you eradicate Hamas, unless the Organization of Islamic Cowards, OIC, demand that Hamas, unless the United Nations, which is turning out to be the useless nations, demand Hamas remove their charter, scrap their charter, which calls for the annihilation of Israel, there will never be peace on the part of the Palestinians, whether it be the West Bank or Gaza. Never with Israel. Israel has bent over backwards to appease and accommodate these terrorists, and the only thing it's resulted in is a constant war. And as Golda Meir stated, they are not going to take this sitting down, and they will defend themselves. And I think, Al, it was a sabotage. I know. I mean, look how the Biden-Harris regime had funded the protest that broke out earlier this year in Israel. Look how they supported the attacks on the Netanyahu government. I mean, going back to Barack Hussein Satoru Obama employing his campaign team and dispatching them to Israel to defeat Netanyahu in 2014, and it's met with absolute silence by the U.S. media. You know, it's one action after another. And as Golda Meir said, I understand the Arabs wanted to wipe us out, but do they really expect us to cooperate? And I'll tell you, that's why I love Netanyahu. I mean, they are not taking this lying down. And I would also find interesting is the technology aspect of it. No one's talked about how Israel was relying on technology, and that technology absolutely burned them. Go ahead, Al. I haven't heard that part. I haven't heard that side of it, which is a failure of technology, which has led to the invasion into Israel, and that's very plausible.
Well, yeah, I guess it's been 50 years since the Yom Kippur War in 73, which Israel nearly lost, and after 50 years, Israel became complacent. Exactly. And with that complacency, they became, they lost their edge. Because leading up to it, it said that the jihadis were preparing 2 years for this. And the activity on the border did increase because we even talked about it where the Israelis were shooting people in the kneecaps who were on the border and rushing the border, and they used mainly kids and civilians, and they were having all these rallies and protests at the border that became commonplace. It became a weekly thing every Friday, and complacency did set in. But as we learn, as they were having all of these weekly protests at the border, there was groups within the groups, and they were laying charges underneath the fence to blow it up at a later date. And they did this in 34 different locations along the border of Israel. And then when the day when they were ready to attack, they blew the charges, blew 34 holes in, and then hundreds, if not hundreds of jihadis came through the gates and attacked neighborhoods. It'd be like they came into your neighborhood and started just shooting people, unarmed, elderly, children, babies, just to cause mass mayhem, decapitating babies, kidnapping elderly women. It didn't matter. And then there were even civilians that came over. There's footage of one woman, an elderly, not elderly, but she was probably in her 50s and 60s, and then she went into one home and was trying on clothes and eating out of the fridge, and then she made dinner for the other jihadis. So they came in and they ate, and then they left and went on their killing spree. And then there were young children as well who were going from house to house, and then when they found a live person, they would yell to the jihadis to come in and kill these Israelis. And in fact, there was even one jihadi, and they had the audio of him calling into his parents going, "Mama or Dad, I killed 10 Jews." And then there was celebration on both sides of the line from the mother and the father was going, "Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar," after the jihadi son was bragging about killing these 10 Jews. He said, go onto my WhatsApp account and see the video of me killing these 10 Jews. I did it with my own bare hands." Disgusting and evil.
So does that mean that the parents are Hamas? Or are they
Hamas
Palestinians?
Supporters. Well, it's the same thing. I mean, really, Hamas is... They were elected by 80% of the people who live in Gaza. They are the duly elected government. 80% of the people support them. I would say as close as probably 95% or more support their Hamas brothers over the Israelis.
Well, you know, speaking of Hamas supporters, I want to do this really quick. It's a 20-second soundbite, the 20-second portion by Pramila Jayapal. If you want to talk about supporting Hamas, you want to talk about supporting terrorist organizations. I wondered why Pramila Jayapal was on Meet the Press, and she used, and if you listen to her, if you have the stomach to listen to her, she talks about the de-escalation, and the United States needs to take the lead. And I thought it interesting. I don't know why, but the term de-escalation perked my ears up. And it's like, why would she be using that word? And then I went to the care.com website, and I found this press release that CARE is sending out. Americans sent almost 225,000 messages to Congress urging ceasefire in Gaza amidst Israel's war crimes. Okay, now it's a war crime. So Hamas cast a stone. They throw the stones, but they don't like getting stones thrown back at them. So here is the less than genius Pramila Jayapal talking about the de-escalation.
The United States has a responsibility to de-escalate the situation. We see the escalation on the northern border with Hezbollah, and I think this is the moment for us to de-escalate, to call for a cessation of hostilities, and to allow humanitarian aid through and the negotiators to work to get the hostages released.
Now, you know what's interesting about that term and her statement about getting humanitarian aid? It's exactly what the Council on American Islamic Relations is calling for, which means that Jayapal is nothing but a prostitute for the pimps at CARE. CARE has crafted a message to Congress that calls for the de-escalation, okay, an immediate ceasefire. Now, why would Jayapal use the same verbiage that the Council on American Islamic Relations is using and calling for humanitarian aid? Where did she get that verbiage from? She got it for CARE. I'm telling you, Al, the CARE is a cancer. I don't know why they weren't shut down immediately. I have no idea why Omar Ahmad and Nihad Awad are still in the United States as a result of their actions and involvement with the Islamic Association for Palestine. But it's turning out that people like Rashida Tlaib and Pramila Jayapala, nothing but prostitutes for the of the Council on American Islamic Race Relations, using the same verbiage that CARE crafted in requesting that you contact your Congress, your congressional offices, to call for a ceasefire and to de-escalate the situation in Gaza that Hamas started.
Yeah, and when they're asking for this ceasefire, what they're really asking for, it's called a hudna, H-U-D-N-A. It's an Arabic word meaning to cease fighting, go back to your base, and rearm for another day. So they had the first blow, and they didn't want these people who are calling for a ceasefire want Israel to go away so they can rearm and come back and attack again. But luckily, the Israelis aren't falling for this hudna. And Representative Jayapal, she's a disgusting human being and has no conception of what she's doing. She's just a useful idiot for the jihadis. Shameful.
Yeah, CARE resolution says the primary goal of the Ceasefire Now resolution, sponsored by a diverse group of dedicated members of Congress, calls on the Biden administration to urgently seek a de-escalation and ceasefire in Israel and occupied Palestine. There's no way, shape, or form that Pramila Jayapal came up with that terminology on her own. And bingo. It just goes to show that CARE is running things on the Democrat Party side, whether it's in the White House, staffing over 100 staffers in the Biden-Harris regime, or it's in Congress. And you can go to Civilization Jihad and the Myth of Modern Islam by Paul Sutliff, and he goes into the issue of the Congressional Staffer's Office, as well as, I'm sorry, I forgot to mention as well, the exercise in competitive analysis, Sharia, the Threat to America, by the Team B2 report by the Center for Security Policy. And they also go into the Congressional Muslim Staffers Association, which is an arm of CARE that staffs Congress offices with Muslims. You want to know why these congressmen and women have the opinions that they do? CARE is deeply involved in the government. They're embedded inside the U.S. government, which also goes to the explanatory memorandum. The Iqwam must understand that their work in America is a kind of grand jihad and eliminating and destroying the Western civilization from within. And you've got the Hamas sympathizers are within our U.S. government. They're in Congress. They're in the White House. They're in the executive branch of government. Let's see. Isn't Jayapal a Hindu? Since when do Hindus side with Islam? Well, it's actually when, good question, Holger, it's when your campaign coffers are stuffed to the gill and you have no qualms about, no concern about being reelected in the state of Washington because your campaign coffers are stuffed. You have plenty of money.
Hey. Who cares what the reason is? I mean, the Jewish Voice for Peace, there's Jews that are also siding with these jihadis. It's a strange bedfellows. Marxist jihadi sympathizers, Jewish Marxist sympathizers, Christians who are anti-Israel, anti-Zionist, are siding with these Hamas supporters. They're getting support from all quarters. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll tell you one thing that President Trump would have done. These protests on these college campuses that are going after targeting Jews, President Trump even hinted at this when he was president, is to stop funding of these schools that allow this type of activity to continue and support for the jihadis. And he was going to stop funding for that. I think he even may have stopped funding at one school But President Biden is doing the exact opposite.
Oh.
But on a good note, totally separate, and we got very little time left.
Okay.
Congratulations to SpaceX on their Falcon 9 rocket launch a half hour ago.
Oh.
Or so, they launched a Falcon 9 rocket with 23 second-generation Starlink internet satellites. It was a success, and congratulations to Elon Musk and SpaceX.
Ah, it was supposed to go off last night, I thought. Huh. So it went off tonight, huh? Good.
Yeah, it was scrubbed on Sunday, off tonight. And on another story, Catherine Herridge, BBC reporter, she is looking at charges, believe it or not.
Huh? What?
Yep, Catherine Herridge is facing contempt charge after she refused a court's order to reveal her source's identity involving a Chinese scientist, a Chinese-American scientist there was an FBI investigation, and she refuses to identify her source. So
good.
I guess because it involves a Chinese Marxist, probably a friend of the president, and hopefully Catherine Herridge will see this through and not have to comply. She could, however, comply if this Chinese scientist gave her if the source gives her the authority or the blessing to go ahead and say who the source was. Otherwise, she may be looking at jail time.
I wonder if CBS, DNC CBS, will demand that she turn her information. But then again,
I don't know.
Go ahead. No, nothing.
No, go on. I was going to shift to another story.
No, I was just thinking, I was just out loud with these. Can you trust these left-wing organizations, They would sell out their own individuals in a heartbeat, but go ahead.
Oh, without question. And in fact, they're doing that now in New York City. The mayor of New York City has said that they are full. They can't take any more illegal aliens that are coming in through the porous, open southern border. So they've created, when they have to, they're very clever, these Marxists, they created a reticketing center for illegals in New York City. They've determined that it's cheaper to offer these illegal aliens a one-way ticket anywhere in the world rather than have them staying in New York City. And many of these illegal aliens are refusing these tickets anywhere in the world, obviously, because, hey, there's more opportunity in America, and many of them are saying that within a month or two, they are on track to get their green card so they can work legally here in the United States.
Let's see. How much does NASA space rockets hold? And the way Musk is sending them up, can he send them up in every week?
Oh, that would be great. Payload of illegal aliens. Shoot them off into space.
Oh, my God.
Get them closer to Allah.
So, let's see. New York City is a sanctuary city, and they can't take any more illegal aliens. New York State's a sanctuary state. And so they're going to spend taxpayer money to take illegal aliens and give them a ticket anywhere they want to go.
Yeah. And then another sports story popped up that martial artists force change after female impersonators athletes dominate women's grappling tournament. Martial artists banded together in an outrage after a pair of cross-dressing athletes in Georgia dominated the female competition in a grappling tournament. Carissa Griffith, a biological male, identifying as a female, captured 4 gold medals at the October 21 Georgia Grappling and BJJ Championship, while Cordelia Gregory, another biological male identifying as female, also took home first and second place medals, according to the report. These true female martial artists refused to compete against these male athletes out of fear for their own safety. And but at least now they have stopped allowing men impersonating women to compete in women martial arts events.
I'm sorry, but a dude can absolutely do extreme damage to a female. I don't care. I mean, oh my God. Oh.
Yeah, the girls just kick him in the nuts and go,
yeah.
Oops.
Oops.
We don't have those. I didn't think it was a prop.
Yeah, that's right. Well, listen, Wednesday, check out the Hank Jones and Polly Sports at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Hank covers politics and sports. I'm sure I'll be talking about college football. Him and his posse, check him out at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Saturday, Osama Dakduk and the beautiful Christie revealing the truth about Islam, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And Al and I will be back next Monday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Other shows on Blog Talk Radio include Annie, Southern Sense Talk Radio. Check out Annie. Friday afternoons, 1 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Her great sidekick, author Curtis Bennett, will join her. And she'll have she has about four or five guests on her show. She does a great job. Check out a political show would be the Simone Nicole Show. Check out Joshua and the Simone Nicole Show Wednesday evenings at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Spreaker.com. That's Spreaker.com. Joshua does a great job. It's a great self-help show. And I'll tell you, Golf Dogs has some great remedies as well. He's on there, Bigfoot, James, and even boys out there at times. So nice to see them. Check out Audrey Russo of Real Talk Radio. Her and a psychic, Mr. P, Thursday evenings, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Go to AudreyRusso.com. That's 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Audrey is a great American. Check her out. And another great American is Joe Gibson. Check his show out Tuesday evening, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio, Restoring Our Republic. And boy, do we need to restore our republic. So can we convert illegal aliens into space aliens? Yes, we can, Bigfoot. Al, any parting shots?
Adios, amigos. Have a great week. And we will see you right here, same time next Monday.
Great. I want to thank Bigfoot, our big patriot. Go to www.bigfootsplace.blogspot.com. It's a fantastic blog spot. Bring it on, boy. Nice to see you. Dogs, HOV Radio. Nice to see you, dogs. Joe Gibson, nice to see you. And I know we had somebody else in the chat room, and I apologize. And Sue from New Mexico, nice to see you all. You all have a great evening. Thank you for joining us. Goodbye, folks out there in podcast land. Keep Israel in your prayers. God bless the United States of America. Ciao for now.
Yes, it was my way.
Wow.
That went fast.
Boy, it did. I tell you, I didn't want to get too sidetracked on the Strategic Petroleum Reserve issue, but I got to say, I'm telling you, that article in Daily Caller was so revealing, and the numbers don't add up, which is common with this. It seems to be a common thread in the Biden-Harris regime where numbers just don't add up, and the constant lies and the lack of transparency. You know, and then you got Jayapal with her stupid comment, and I'm reading, you know, I do read the CARE press releases, and I was reading the CARE press releases, and their message to Congress and their congressman is about de-escalation. It's like, son of a gun, Jayapal is one of the front women for CARE. They're using her as well as other congressmen and women to get their information out. How much have they compromised the United States House of Representatives?
A lot. That's what they do. They're open book.
Boy, oh boy, isn't that the truth? Holy cow. Man. And then you've got Rashida Tlaib, and this is where the media in this country are nothing but hypocrites, and they show their allegiance by not holding members of Congress accountable of both parties. How can a member of the United States House of Representatives be actively supporting a foreign terrorist organization? And if Rashida Tlaib has any type of security clearance, no matter what it is, she should be charged with treason.
Yep. And meanwhile, Modi is, I guess, Jayapal, she's Indian, I guess. Well, Modi, he's arresting pro-Palestine women protesters carrying up their Palestinian flags in New Delhi. And these Muslims, like these supremacists, forget that India was one of the first countries to recognize Palestinian state in 1980, and they're still protesting. But Modi's having none of it, so congratulations to him for arresting these jihadis.
Man, I'll tell you, the U.S. State Department, looking at their website, U.S. State Department. Foreign terrorist organizations, Bureau of Counterterrorism. And we have members of Congress supporting foreign terrorist organizations. And India is putting a kibosh to it. because they know how Hindus are being treated and abused. And killed. My goodness gracious. Wow. What's it going to take?
Where do you see all this going? Where's it going to end?
You and I are asking the same question.
I don't think it is. I mean, Hamas, I mean, we've been doing this long, and we know that Hamas is, they're just one tentacle in the octopus of jihad. ISIS has the same ideological underpinnings, as well as every other terrorist group, every other follower of Islam. They all follow the same playbook. The name of the terrorist group is irrelevant. Hamas is just one group among many. So, no, it's not going to end.
You know,
Hamas, another one will pop up. They just need... Hopefully they just retake all the Gaza and then turn it into another Mediterranean vacation spot, as Israel is on the other side.
You know, what's really interesting is the naivety and actually the brilliance of the Muslim Brotherhood in launching the campaign using the term Islamophobia. And Islamophobia, it's designed to instill fear into the hearts of the disbelievers. And how they've dumbed Americans down to the point where they tug at the heartstrings, but it's a means of deflecting away from the truth. And the truth of the matter is that if you read the Quran, the word of Allah is quite clear. They despise the Jews. They despise the infidels. I mean, we talk about two Quranic verses, 471 and 484. You know, go to war for the sake of Allah, lay not burdens in aid but yourself, and provoke the believers. Well, you've got Iran provoking the believers. You got Hamas provoking the believers. You know, it's not just the fact that it's Hamas. It's the entire Palestinian territory. The Palestinians are taught to hate the Israelis. And they use the Quran as a justification of that hate. And it's the same Quran, it's the same Islamic law, the Sharia, that dictates what the jihad means, which is to war against non-Muslims, but also that fornicators, that homosexuals should be stoned to death. That's not our terminology. That's on page 610 in Reliance of the Traveler. And it's carefully omitted in any type of discussion, and we see that in New York City, you've got the LGBT community is flying their rainbow flag alongside the Palestinian flag. Do you think that the Palestinians have any tolerance for homosexuals? They don't. So where is the reality here? Where is what makes it so difficult for people here in the United States to understand what exactly we're up against? There's no assimilation, there's no integration, and just because the Islamic movement throws money at your cause, when they become the dominators, and that's the end game, is to dominate your history. And we see it on a small scale in Hamtramck, Michigan. What happened to the city council became dominated by a Muslim majority, and now they aren't allowing the LGBT flag, the rainbow flag, in Hamtramck, Michigan. That should tell you exactly where you stand. And yet, the ignorance of the American people is fueled by the deception and by the deceit that the Muslim Brotherhood has put in place here in America. Yes? Too simplified? I don't know.
No. Nailed it perfectly.
It's amazing. I mean, just read Reliance of the Traveler and, you know, the excuses that were thrown at you, well, you are cherry-picking, you know, Quranic verses and you don't understand Arabic. And it turns out that 99.7% of the Muslims, they don't understand the traditional Arabic. But you've got Islamic scholars and Islamic clerics cherry-picking Quranic verses to justify jihad, to war against non-Muslims. It's really simple. That's a simple explanation. That's the simple definition of jihad by Islamic clerics, using the Sharia to justify jihad. But, you know, we're told it's an inner struggle. No, it's not. It's the war against non-Muslims. Islamic clerics say so. And they use three Quranic verses. They cherry-pick to justify it, and that's perfectly acceptable to the Islamic world. But if you and I were to say that jihad means to war against non-Muslims, well, right away, well, they know that it's going to be hard to refute. Well, no, it's not. It's on page 599 of Reliance of the Traveler. We're not cherry-picking anything. We're using your own words. Well, you're taking it out of context. No, I'm not. I'm just reading exactly what you wrote. Wow.
And we can say it till we're blue in the face.
Yeah. It's amazing. It really is. I mean, after 15 years, we're back. We've come full circle. And thanks to Hamas attacking Israel, and we're watching the cowards go around the world now, and even the useless nations has adopted we need a ceasefire. Well, excuse me, why didn't you tell Hamas to cease fire? So Israel doesn't have a right to defend herself from Islamic terrorism that calls for the annihilation of Israel? Nah. You failed. You have failed the people of the world, United Nations. You have failed Israel, and you failed the world. God. I could do a whole
thing. It's only going to get worse because we're only in phase two of operations in Israel. We've got the West Bank, and we've got Lebanon and Syria is going to come into play at some point. We just don't know when. And then will China go after Taiwan? Why wouldn't they?
Exactly. Biden's weak. Jake Sullivan's weak. And Obama wants wants this. What? They need more chaos. Why not have another fire in the world? This would not have happened. And see, that's the thing. That's why everything's on fast track. They've so wanted to eliminate Trump, and he's only become more he's only become more positive.
Mm-hmm.
And his base is solid. And the mission by the establishment is to so discredit this guy, they're having a hard time doing it. Oh, gosh. All right.
No. Can you figure it out? Let me know.
Yeah, right. We'll figure something out.
Yeah.
All right, man. Have a nice evening.
All right, you too. Great show. Have a great week.
You as well, man.